Yate, Steve Pelletier, Yenishe, Mighty Day, Skeezin, Initially, Billigana, Bushes, Jean, Keenla, Cheatney, Dasha, Che, Billigana, Dasha, Nelly. Welcome back to Res Ball, where we are talking Pistons. And guess what? The Pistons are flirting with being the worst team in franchise history yet again. Andy and I talk about why in the world are we still here. And I also identify who I think are the two ideal free agents that will be available this summer for the Detroit Pistons. So let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone. Yes, the Pistons are a 12-win team. It's the middle of March. Let's check the fan barometer. I'm pretty sure like the day after, the minute after, it was really close to right after we were done recording our last episode is when the video went out there of Troy Weaver yelling at the fan and getting mad at him. I mean, I do share the sentiments of people of like, I wish I knew what was said because we can all imagine fans saying off color or out of line, out of pocket things to coaches, to players, to GMs that we make them react the way Weaver did. But I tried to pick the tweets that responded to this video that best gave me my reaction and was like even keel of considering both sides of the fan, being able to say something to Weaver and then Weaver's reaction to it being a legitimate response or also maybe being somewhat unprofessional. So we start off with Tayshaun's block at Tayshaun's block. Between this and Tom Gore's hurling t-shirts at people, I think we as fans can no longer feel safe at Piston games. I thought that one was pretty funny. Brandon Dent, shout out Kool-Aid at Woodward Sports. Brandon Dent, the beat writer for Woodward Sports and Pistons. Not a good look at all by Troy Weaver. Wish we knew what was said before the camera start, but from what we do see, there's nothing good to say about Troy in this interaction. And I thought Brandon had a nice response to that, saying like, yeah, you can't react this way. Pistons talk at Pistons underscore underscore talk. Oh, sorry, Brandon, my bad. So Brandon Dent at Detroit Kool-Aid. That's his handle. I forgot to give that. And then we got Pistons talk at Pistons underscore underscore talk. Cade Cunningham impact on the floor versus sitting on the bench is extremely noticeable. And then he tweeted out, I think this was in the Orlando game. This is 3 days ago. A picture of this graphic they put up during the game. It says Cade Cunningham on floor, Pistons offensive rating 117.6. Cade Cunningham on the bench, Pistons offensive rating 91.6. So yeah, huge notice dip in offensive production when Cade sits. Detroit Kool-Aid, Brandon Dent comes back again. Isaiah Stewart on Cade Cunningham not playing the fourth quarter versus the Raptors. Cade was a great teammate and told coach to let Sasser finish the game tonight. So if you didn't know why Cade sat in the fourth, most of the fourth for that Raptors game, that's why he said he called his own number and said let Sasser finish. Cal Bridius is responding to people talking about Taj Gibson being a good signing. He says the, quote, Troy Weaver is a year late to make obvious roster moves, end quote. Agenda continues apace. Taj is exactly the kind of player, a big vet who can play but doesn't have to. Many of us have been begging for exactly this result. Tariq at Tariq Xavier says playing Sasser with another ball handler Greater than. That's what we've been saying all season two, Zareek. Play Sasser with another ball handler. Don't let him be a point guard. Bobby Marks. We got celebrities here. Bobby Marks. Simone Fontecchio has now started 41 games and as a result, reached starter criteria. His qualifying offer in cap hold in 2024-25 is $5,216,324. Acquired at the trade deadline, Fontecchio is averaging 15.2 points, 49% field goal, 43% on threes with the Pistons. He is a restricted free agent if the qualifying offer is tendered by 6/29. It's June 29th. So that gives us our answer on if Simone Fontecchio will reach that starter criteria. He did. We are going to circle back to this here in a minute because it is a talking point for us today. King I at Trademark Taz says, Pistons been historically ass and raised the season ticket prices. I respect the hustle, but that's greasy as hell. I agree with that. It's like, come on, man. You're this bad and you're going to raise ticket prices. I know my guy Doc at Pro Pistons, Pistons Pro Wrestling Podcast, like he's been saying that all season. Like they can't be doing this. And we echo those sentiments. King I again returns that Trademark Taz. At least Sheila Ford is actually a Lions fan. She was born into it and cares about that sorry ass franchise. Tom Gore saw an easy come up and been laughing all the way to the bank. I can't agree with that anymore. Oh, speaking of platinum equity, High Yield Harry at High Yield Harry says someone gave Platinum Equity a 1-star review. Who gave it, you ask? None other than Bojan Bogdanovic, who got traded last month by the Pistons, which the founder of Platinum owns. And then she gave a screenshot. You can see on Yahoo, somebody gave a 1-star review, and they put Bojan Bogdanovic. Whether it's Bojan or not, it's incredibly funny, though. B-Ball Index at the underscore B-Ball underscore index. Here's a look at which centers are shooting better. And I'll post the link to this in the podcast forum. It's a graph of all the centers in the NBA of like who's taking better shot quality, who's taking more points. I implore you to look at where Jalen Duren lands among this. I mean, he does land among some good names. He's pretty much right in between like Ivica Zubac, Nikola Vucevic, and Jared Allen, all guys who are pretty efficient. And he's like kind of in the middle in terms of like getting points and getting better efficiency. But I want people to look at this. Again, I'll put the link to this in the episode description because it'll be something to consider as we're going to analyze Durant's full season. NBA University at NBA underscore University tortured all of us, and they put out the Pistons' most played lineup each season since 2018. It's just painful to go look at all these past lineups. And King I at Trademark Taz again responds, Tom Gores cares so much about the community because he has been forcing the community to root for a lot of weak-ass teams. Asha, Detroit basketball. Our guy, Eric Vincent, at I Am Eric Vincent, who is, of course, the Detroit Pistons writer for Clutch Points, also Detroit Sports Nation, says, Jaden Ivey got the potential to get double-digit free throw attempts every night, hashtag Pistons, to which Hiro at Hiro Beats, that's at H-I-R-O-B-E-A-T-S. And Eric Vincent, I forgot, at I Am Eric Vincent. Iro responds to Eric saying, this isn't going to matter if he's never a believable threat from three, which, yeah, I think we all say that too. Woj tweeted out that Taj Gibson is signing a deal for the rest of the season, so he's going to remain here, which Brady Frederick over at DBB at Brady underscore Fred says, is it bad that signing Taj Gibson, who will never see the court, is one of Troy's five best moves? At B-Ball Index again, at the underscore B-Ball underscore Index. Here's a look at the Ford's passing landscape. Again, I'll post this one as well and link in the episode description. If you look up on the graph, if you go higher up on the graph, on the vertical axis, creating better looks for teammates. So higher up on the vertical axis, that means you create better looks for your teammates. If you go more to the right on the horizontal axis, that means you're creating more potential assists for teammates. This one is for our guy, Asar Thompson. I mean, just go look at where Asar is. He's right below Bojan, and he's right above guys like Nikola Batu. And he's really not that far off from Jalen Williams. He's not that far off from Victor Wembanyama and Jaylen Brown. So it does give you positive indicators of Asar's multi-purpose positional versatility stuff, which we want to see more of him. So Andy, what do you think of the fan barometer this week?
They have been very accurate with keeping track of what's going on with this team. And I mean, it's weird for a team that doesn't win. I mean, yes, recently we won some games, but for a team that doesn't win very often, they have so much stuff to talk about. It's actually kind of shocking. But like the Troy Weaver arguing with fans like that, I mean, just how can you be so, and I get it. It's your job. You have to be in the stands. You have to go there. But if things are going in that direction, like you got to leave, you got to go. You can't interact with fans that way because let's be real. What they're saying is justified from the job you have done. You have done a very poor job. Like the quote I remember from the videos, the guy saying you suck at your job, which like, I'm not sure how you defend that if you're Troy Weaver.
Yeah, and you and I both said the same thing about it. Is just, to me, when I saw this, I was like, Troy Uvier has no self-awareness. Like, you have no self-awareness to where you realize everybody in the fans and the stands hates you. Like, they do not like what you've done with this team. You must not be reading anything. You must not be looking on social media. You must not be hearing any reports or anything. Like, you have no self-awareness. You are putting yourself in that situation to where that is going to happen. I remember when I was a kid, I grew up around people that did some shady stuff. And I'm like, sometimes I don't want to hang around with you because I know I'm going to put myself in a situation where something bad might happen. And like, that's got to be something with him and Troy Uvier and the whole, you know, Pistons front office. Like, if you're going to put yourself out there with the fans, with a team this bad, like, they're probably going to say something. They paid their ticket to come there too as well. You didn't pay your ticket. You're just sitting there. You can also just sit in the box, man. Like, you don't have to be out there as well. That's the part of it to me that does rub me the wrong way a little bit, is like, is Troy just sitting out there like, oh, I'm going to be here and nobody's going to say anything to me. You know, it's my house. Like, come on, man. You got to have a little bit more self-awareness. Just don't put yourself in that position.
But for me, what's scarier is to feel like you could respond that way. Like, you probably have zero concern that you're in jeopardy of losing your job. Because even if you have been doing a decent job, just from a public relations standpoint, you can't do this. Like, that's not how any successful organization wants their general manager to interact with fans, regardless. And I know this is Detroit, but regardless of what someone says, if you are the general manager of the franchise, you can't have those interactions with fans. That's just not something you can do. And unless you have zero concern that your job is even at risk, because if you were successful, this would be something that most GMs would look at as a black eye. When you're on track to be possibly the worst team in franchise history, this is not something I can see anyone having the confidence to do.
Yeah, it also reminds me of when Tom Gores was like visibly inebriated, like beyond inebriated, hugging Andre Drummond afterwards. Like, man, this is just embarrassing stuff. Like, you can't be doing this. Come on, be a professional. Like, at least have some kind of integrity, like both of those things. Because I know some people have thrown out the like, well, it's because he's a black dude responding like somebody from the DMV. What? And I'm like, I don't think that applies in this case. I think it is more about being professional. And it is consistently something that we've seen with the drunk owner, now with Troy getting upset. And two, like, if you don't like it, you're the GM, you're the owner here. You just have a few simple words to say. Security, remove that guy. Like, you don't even have to get mad, right? When you have that kind of power, that's all you can say. Security, remove that guy. Or you can leave and go in the tunnel. Like, you have the power to do all these other things instead of like trying to be a tough guy or responding in that way. You don't have to respond to. That's just a part of it. It's the mirror thing. And I do wish we know what was said, though. That is the one part where I will say, we know fans can say terrible things. You know, we wanted to say terrible things ourselves on this podcast. So if that is the case, then it's hard not to react that way. But again, still, I don't know how you get to be a VP of basketball or GM or an owner and not just understand like, hey, if that happens, all I have to say is security, remove that guy. It's a simple thing to say to where you don't have to threaten somebody like that. Because if the reverse happened where the fan is telling, you know, Troy, hey, I'm going to beat your ass, like, he's getting arrested probably, or he's at least getting banned from Pistons games. So really think about the power dynamics involved in that as well. You said something here, though, and you said possibly the worst team in franchise history right here, right now, in the year of our Lord, 2024. How many games did the Pistons win last year?
Last year, they won 17.
And for you out there in the audience, because Andy and I already like kind of prepped before this, do you have any idea what the franchise low is for wins? What's the lowest win total this team has ever had in its storied history that goes all the way back to 1948? Andy, what's the lowest win total this team has ever had?
So before you told me, and obviously they would have said 17 was the lowest if it was last year, but I really couldn't believe that the team had won less games. But when you showed me that it was 16 wins, I was like, man, that's rough.
anybody that follows Keith Trudeau is like the Pistons historian. I believe he does the Bad Boys podcast. I cannot remember what it's called. Sorry, Keith. He has tweeted out this time last year, he was pretty much tweeting out the Pistons are X amount of games away from being the worst in franchise history. Guess what? We are back at that same thing. It's like Groundhog Day. You woke up in the same day with the same problems. It's terrible. And 4 wins. They have 4 wins away from tying the worst and 5 wins away from being able to beat it. If anything else screams like everybody that's involved with putting this team together needs to get fired, it's that you're in the exact same position you were a year ago. When a year ago, you didn't have your star player. You didn't have the coach that you thought would save you. You didn't have all these advantages. Another year where Ivy's supposed to be ahead in his development. Another year where Durin is supposedly like being such a badass and getting all these points and stuff. You're in the exact same position. I said we're going to circle back to the Simone Fontecchio one, and this is where this idea of like, why are you still flirting with being the worst team in franchise history? I think Simone Fontecchio is a great example of why. We thought maybe it had to do with Pistons like nickel and diming of like, they don't want him to reach the starter criteria thing and make a little extra money. And now we see, hey, guess what? He did reach that starter criteria, so it must not be that. And to me, that's a worse indicator. It's like, okay, so if the Pistons weren't worried about him reaching that starter criteria and getting a little bit of extra money, you're telling me that they pulled him out of starting lineup. You're telling me they reduced his role for basketball reasons. Like, you have got to be kidding me. This is why you suck so bad, and this is why you are in the exact same position when you have that shooter. And Bobby Marks laid it out in that tweet, 49% from the field, 42%, 43%. From three-point range. We've all seen it. Everybody's tweeted that. Everybody's commented on it. Everybody said it and cheered for him in the games. This guy makes a difference when he's on the court. If you listen to the last Pistons Pulse, they talked about Simone like, he's not like the greatest defender, but he's a big dude and he knows how to get in the way. He's a functional NBA player that this team absolutely needs. So the reason you pull him out of lineups and the reason why you're playing around with his minutes like this isn't because you're worried about paying more, is because of basketball reasons? Like, what are you doing?
Well, that would just fit with basically the entire season as far as basketball reasons that don't make sense. We started Killian Hayes over Jaden Ivey, who we eventually waived and is no longer on the team. We started with Bagley, who then lost his job to Wiseman. We don't know why. We traded and is no longer on the team. So then, there was a time period where we brought Kevin Knox in off the streets. We signed him and the team was actually, the defense was horrible, but the team was actually, I think it had like a net rating of like 1 or 2 or something. But from the horrible basketball we were watching, at least it was functional. But then they moved away from that because they had to give Livers minutes and, you know, various reasons. And it just justifies the idea that some people are like, is Monty trying to get fired so he can just collect money for the next 5 years without having to do anything? Because some of the decisions, that's really the only logical conclusion you can come to. Because if you just look at lineup data and you're like, every lineup is basically better with him in it, let's bring him off the bench. That sounds like a good decision. Like, nothing they do ever makes sense.
And if you're wondering, who was that 16-win Detroit Pistons team? Well, that was all the way back in 1970 and 1980. And the head coach for the first 12 games at last was, that's right, baby, Dick Vitale. So any Piston fan, if that's that old, if you want to see them get angry and sad, talk to them about Dick Vitale as a head coach. After those 12 games, Richie Adubato took over and they were 12-58 the rest of the way. That team had Special K on it, on Greg Kessler. He was actually on that team as a rookie. So he might see the worst two teams in Pistons franchise history. He's already seen the worst two teams in franchise history because he saw the last one last year. He might see the third one there. But I mean, look at this collection of talent here. Kent Benson, Leon Douglas, Terry Durad, Earl Evans, Roy Hamilton, Phil Hubbard, Special K. Bob Lanier was on that team. Thank God there's one guy. Ron Lee, John Long, Steve Malevich, Bob McAdoo, Jim McElroy, Eric Mone, Jackie Robinson, John Shoemate, Terry Tyler. Like, good grief. You're telling me that Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren is going to, that team is going to maybe be worse than this one. again, everybody involved with this team has to go, because we all see it. Everybody in NBA analytics, everybody in NBA media, nobody's saying that Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, Isaiah Stewart, Asar Thompson, they're not saying they have lacked talent. I would dare say that they are like leagues better than that team that I just laid out, except for Bob Lanier. Bob Lanier's a beast. But I mean, the reason why you're flirting again with being the worst team in franchise history is because of everything else. It's because you put the players in positions where they don't succeed. You mess around with the Simone Fontecchio thing. When he's working, you just magically pull him out of the starting lineup and go back to the lineup with Asar and Stu and Duren, that the spacing kills it. And that really puts Cade and Ivy in a position to need to hit 10 threes every night. And then you mess around, like you said, with the Jaden Ivy at the beginning of the season. You continue to mess around with like Marcus Sasser being a point guard. Zariq Xavier laid that out. You're of like, just play him next to a ball handler. That's how he's going to work. All these things add up to that. It's like, it's not the collection of talent. It's how you've utilized or not utilized that talent. You're still in that exact same position. I don't understand how this front office and everybody isn't going to get in major hot water and get fired, because everything's been mismanaged.
And then, I mean, even if you just watch some of the games recently, and I think you might have mentioned it on the last pod, but it's like, why are we trying to post Isaiah Stewart more? It's like things that just, and he's actually one of the best three-point shooters we have on the team. We'd love to see his volume increase. And instead, they're like, hey, he's having a great year from three. Let's start posting him up instead. Like, it, I don't understand how they make their decisions or why they make their decisions. And it's like, okay, if we're going to try and develop like Sasser as a point guard or whatever, then let's just do all the experimenting that we want to do, because it's going to affect winning. So just make it a development year. Do the things you want to do, run your experiments, do all that kind of stuff. Let the guys develop. That's fine. But then don't tell everyone you're going to turn the corner. You're going to do this in free agency. You're going to try to win your play-in goals. Like, it's all nonsense. Like, basically, if you take everything they've told you and bump it back a year or two, what they would tell you would make a whole lot more sense than the timeline of what they're actually trying to do. Because last season, they hit 17 wins. Cade was out after game 12, and probably by game 20, we're looking at trying to get the number one draft pick. This year, they were trying to win, and they were worse. Like, it just makes no sense.
Yeah, and anybody out there saying like, well, they have that turnaround in them next year. You know, the Bucks went from 15 wins, and I think it was in Giannis's rookie season, to 41 wins the next year. It's like, okay, you can use that example, but you got to remember, the Bucks fired their head coach and Giannis and Middleton became all NBA players pretty much. Like, that's the kind of thing that is going to happen. And if you're going to sit here and say Cade Cunningham is one of them, we're obviously going to agree with you. If you're going to sit here and say Jaden Ivey's the other one, then guess what? Monty Williams has got to go. That relationship has just been weird, the way he's utilized him and jerked him around and stuff like that. I just don't believe Monty is going to be the coach that is going to help Ivey get to that like Chris Middleton type of level. And last time we laid out, you know, year four of these rebuilds, what happened there and how did the teams go after that? The process 76ers, year four, they were 28 wins. And then the next season, they won 54 because Embiid became MVP Embiid. And because Ben Simmons came in like gangbusters, even that one again, like Ivy has to get to that level. I just don't think that Monty is going to let him magically in an offseason, like run free, unlock all this potential, and not jerk him around and not treat him and do the things that he's done with him this season. It just doesn't seem there. And if you're going to say Jalen Duren is the other guy that's going to blow up like that, then guess what? You're taking touches away from everybody else. You're taking touches away from Ivy. I mean, what is Jalen Duren doing other than catching lobs from Cade, right? Like, if you're going to sit here and make that argument of like, okay, Jalen Duren's going to be the next one to make that leap, then what is he doing on offense? Do you have any idea, Andy?
Yeah, that's what doesn't make sense as far as how you're trying to build things and make things fit together. Like, one of the reasons why Fontecchio fits so well is because he plays off of Cade and Duren and what they create. But this team still needs to score more points. We need to have more scoring, more options. And that only happens by unlocking Ivy, unlocking Asar instead of actually having him shooting so many three-point attempts. And we have seen almost no... Well, actually, I take that back. We have seen a play of creativity, and then Monty will comment about it in the press conference, and then we won't see it again for like weeks at a time. Like, that's not how you're going to figure this thing out for these guys to actually work together. And if you look at Cade's numbers this season, they look good. How much more of a jump do you expect his numbers and his shooting to take for him to be something that makes the team better? I mean, even if he cuts down, what, one turnover per game, which is significant, what is that really going to do to this team's win total? It doesn't change things. Like Ivy or Asar, they have to take a leap, or there has to be a huge player who comes in to really change what the team is. And I don't see how that's happening with this coach. And I just don't even see what player comes in to make that happen without taking away from what you have in the other players.
Yeah, and we're talking about one side of the ball too. Think about the defense. I'm saving this for later, but just to give you a preview, Duren's going to have to take maybe the biggest jump anybody's ever taken from where they started as a defender to where they end up in their third year based on just the numbers and just what we've seen there. Like, Duren has to take a gigantic leap forward. Somebody on this team has to play great point of attack defense on point guards. Maybe that could be Asar, but then after that, somebody on this team has to play great defense against the wings that are in the NBA. I like Isaiah Stewart, but I don't necessarily think that is going to be like his number one role. I think he could handle like Paolo Banchero, that level, but anybody more agile and quick than that, I think it's going to be a little bit of a problem there. And again, we don't have even the basis of something that looks like a good defense, because Duren isn't a great shot blocker. Stu is a good switch guy, but he's probably more limited to, like, you know, LeBron being slower, that kind of guy, Paolo Banchero. And he can give other guys fits in spurts, but nothing that can sustain like long-term success. Nothing that screams like just throw him out there. And then you have Asar. Asar, we both believe, will be all defense, will be this with just generations like Tony Allen, maybe Andre Kirilenko, that kind of guy. You have one guy. And then there's Cade in there, who frankly has not been good on defense either, because he hasn't needed to be. And even the long-term projection, like, you don't want him on top guys, right? You don't want your best offensive player to have to take that load on defense as well. And we've seen it even with LeBron at the very highest level with the best, second best player ever in NBA history. Like, it just took a tax on him that he couldn't do it. And it wasn't until the Heat all set, he took some pressure off him, and that's when he started winning championships and stuff. The defense is just so far behind. Like, it would have to take somebody like Cade to take this gigantic leap we don't see. And I know I'm ragging on Duren, but even Cade, like, it would take this gigantic leap that nobody really believes in, or nobody would see coming from Cade, to where all of a sudden this season he's like, I wish he could have better effort. Next year he's like Jason Tatum or something like that. It's going to take a whole lot more on defense. Even if you brought in one guy to shore it up, there's still so many other holes that it needs to fill, where the jump that you want to take from 15 wins to 41, the jump you want to take from that 28 to 54, like, the defense is nowhere near being able to make that jump. And I honestly do not see a way that turns around that quickly, either in free agency, either with a trade, because it involves removing one of the young guys. It probably involves moving Duren, to be perfectly honest. And it probably involves removing, or at least putting, Jaden Ivey to the bench, because you want that point guard defender next to Cade in that kind of like, oh, we want this defense to be solid. And I just don't think the team is going to do that. I also don't think that's like long term the best way to do it. So the defense is really the big thing for me. Like, I can't see that jump without something super unforeseen, something way, way, way anomalous happening.
Yeah. It's just hard trying to figure out the direction on what they're trying to do. And we've already started to look a little bit at free agency in terms of like who can help fix these problems and fix this situation. And I'm just, it's getting harder and harder to look to see like, okay, well, what fits? And I mean, honestly, for me, I don't see a big jump coming next year. Maybe people think that's way too negative. But if you look at it from a longer time horizon, I just think that's what you have to do to be realistic. Because any quick fix solution that I think would make people happy in the short run, I think sacrifices so much in the long term. As far as they do have a great foundation that they've laid, the problem is it took so long to lay this foundation when people have promised so much more. I think that's the biggest cause for frustration. It's like, wait a minute, this is technically, we're probably at ground zero. And that was promised before, I think, last season started.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned, what do we look to improve with? Like, what's out there that can be improved? We're going to give an exhaustive list of who are the free agents are closer to like the end of April when the season winds down. But I've already started looking into like, okay, who is the player that realistically could come here, like the Pistons could send an offer to, that somebody isn't going to match. That's not really a restricted free agent, so they don't have to play that game. That also, like, can find the role here that, number one, isn't going to get in the way of Cade and Ivy, could potentially, like, mentor a Jalen Duren if they did have somebody that is good on defense. I'm going to keep it real with you. Again, we'll go over the list later in more detail, but especially the defensive guy, like last year, we talked about, oh, let's just overpay Brook Lopez for 1 year. Like, give him a 1 year max because he can come in here and stabilize the defense, and everybody in the front court, Stu, Duren, they can all learn from somebody like that, and he can still play and you don't have to play in major minutes. That guy doesn't exist in this class. Like, there is no guy like that. The only guy that comes close is a Nick Claxton. But if you're going to sign Nick Claxton, number one, you're probably going to have to give him a max offer, and he's got to take Jalen Duren's job because Nick Claxton is already so much better. And he is what we would like Duren to be, super high efficiency, that shoots a high percentage at the rim, blocks a ton of shots, and still solid on defense. Like, those are the only two guys, or that's the only guy to me that I recognize in this draft class. But we'll have that debate later on when we give the full list. I keep thinking, like, what's realistic? Like, what's the hole in this lineup still to where you still play Sar, you still play Stewart, still play Duren? You still play Ivy, you still play Cade, you still play Sasser. Like, that's my thought of this. It's like, you still want to invest in those guys. You still want to give them minutes in the roles of either starters or six man or first guys off the bench. To me, when I look at that, I'm like, okay, they still need a forward shooter. Even if they re-sign Fontecchio, I think like another stretch four would be good. And that's what they've talked about pretty much all season. It's like, oh, we want a forward, a power forward who can still shoot. And I do still think they need another like wing shooter. So I've at least identified two guys that I'm like, you know what? I think these guys are the ideal candidates for the Pistons. Number one being a 6'9", 220-pound power forward, plays power forward. This season, he is shooting 39.3% from three, 69.1% from two-point range, and then is scoring 10.3 points per game, 3.9 rebounds, 1.5 assists, half a steal, half a block. If you don't know who I'm talking about Obi Toppin. Obi Toppin, to me, profiles as the guy that they continue to look for. Like, there were the John Collins rumors, what, like a season or two ago. They brought Bojan in because they wanted him to be a power forward. They've continued to say they want Stu to shoot more threes. Meanwhile, Obi Toppin has quietly become a really good shooter from three. The first two seasons he was in New York, he kind of got jerked in and out of the lineup because he really doesn't profile as a Tom Thibodeau player. Tibbs likes the Taj Gibson dude that is defense first and really filling the holes like that. But then last year, Obi started to come around and he shot 34.4% from three. This year gets traded to Indiana and he's just blossomed. Like, he's just done a really good job of being the mega athlete that he is and then becoming a very good three-point shooter. If you look at his shot chart too, I mean, he profiles as the things you want the guy that plays next to Cade and Ivy and can play next to Sar and Duren. He does what you want that guy to do. Number one, Obi Toppin is a finisher, 188 of 262 shots at the rim. That's 71.8%. If you don't know anything about Obi Toppin's game, go look him up now. What he was before this season was lob threat. Like, he is a really good athlete. He's a dunk contest athlete. He's competed in that. And that's mainly the thing that was sold on him. It's like, hey, if nothing else, this is a pick and roll guy that continue to be a lob threat. What does Cade love and what does Cade need? Lob threats. He needs as many lob threats as possible. And guess what? This lob threat also has been shooting 40% over three for most of the year. He's shooting 39.4% from three. And really, if you look at his shot chart, It's on the right side where Obi's not shooting well from three. In the right corner, Obi's 8 of 25. That's 32%. From the right wing, he's 12 of 37. That's 32.4%. But then top of the key, Obi is 10 of 22, which is 45.5%. From the left wing, Obi is 27 of 61, which is 44.3. And then from the left corner, Obi is 24 of 61, which is 39.3%. So you have an actual forward, 6'9", 220, who is a lob threat, who shoots threes, who can play pick and roll, who can play pick and pop. And if you look at Obi's numbers before Siakam was traded here versus after Siakam was traded there, he shot 40% consistently before Siakam was there. His numbers were really good, and he worked really well as that like fourth, fifth starter, which again is what this Pistons team absolutely needs. They need that guy to fill in the lineup. Again, he can play with a Fontecchio. He can play with an Asar. He can play with an Isaiah Stewart, and then he definitely fills the supplementary shooter and lob threat role that Aiden and that Ivy need, and that can play next to Duren. Defensively, I worry, though. I do worry, but playing under Tibbs and still earning minutes, that tells you like he got better on defense to where Tibbs still played him. And then he played for Rick Carlisle. You don't get minutes for Rick Carlisle if you can't play defense or at least understand defensive concepts. I'm not going to sit up here and tell you like Obi Toppin is going to turn into this, you know, Paul Millsap, fantastic power forward defender that can do all this off-ball stuff and help cover up for Duren's deficiencies. I don't see that happening. But functionally, he fits in what this team needs, and you just got to live with the lack of defense. I think he'll still be fine. It just sucks that he's not as good of a defender as I would like and would be ideal. And it's just the Pistons, again, the Pistons, like I just said, the defense is so far behind. You just got to find functional guys that work. And then if you play Asar and Obi next to each other, if you play Obi and Stu next to each other, like that's a nice 1-2 punch there where Obi is more offensively oriented and those other guys are more defensively oriented toward Obi's lob threat, his ability to attack the rim and his ability to stretch the floor out. Like that takes pressure away from Stu and Asar to have to do a bunch of things on offense. And especially for Asar, like that spacing will help him out so much to operate and do other things and keep him more in the paint and keep him out of, you know, those corner situations where he's the worst in the league. I think Obi Toppin is the absolute perfect fit. And you can probably pay him something like 15, 20 million per season. Absolutely, it's an overpay. I am not going to argue with anybody about that. But as I said before, anybody that this team offers, they are going to have to overpay. And that 15 to 20 million, it's not really that much. It's like starter level money. That's standard stuff. 15 million actually might be like six man money with the way the cap is going up. But like 20 million per season is pretty much standard starter money from this year going forward. Like you just have to get used to that. And again, you want to pay him something that the minute he sees it, he's like, I can't pass this up. And his agent is like, dude, nobody else is going to give you this money. And basketball-wise, he works. 6'9", 220, lob threat, shoots threes. He's still a young guy, too. He's just in the fourth year in the NBA. He will be 26? So, well, yeah, he just turned 26 March 4th. So he still fits in with the core. He still fits in with the guys here, too, which is another benefit. It's hard to find guys, especially in this free agent market that's already limited, that aren't like 30 year or older to where you're like, oh yeah, let's go get him. But well, he's probably only going to be here for a season or two. I think Obi fits fantastic. What are your thoughts on Obi Toppin here? There's one more stat I want to give, but I want to hear your thoughts.
So you sent me a shot chart after our last pod when, and I think that's when like Obi popped into your mind. And all I saw was the shot chart. And I took a guess and I was wrong. And I took another guess. And so I started, you know, searching. And then I was like, oh, it's him. And then the shot chart matched. So I was like, it is Obi. And then I started watching some of his games that he's played this season and looking at some of his box scores in Indiana. And obviously having Tyrese Haliburton helps out a ton. But looking at his age, looking at his skill set, if you look at the difference that Fontecchio has made on this team, he's replaced Bojan shooting. He's not the scorer Bojan is, but he's still a good scorer. But it's a huge upgrade on the defensive end. And obviously, Toppin is not the shooter that those guys are, but he's an athletic finisher that they are not. But defensively, he's not horrible. He's not Bojan. And just adding wings like that with that skill set will make a dramatic improvement in how the team functions without doing something bad in terms of future cap problems, trading away young players, any of that stuff. So I really like this. And if you look back, honestly, he probably could have been a Piston last season when I think Indiana traded, what, 2 second round picks, I think, to New York or something to get him. But I like him because I've been trying to figure out a different option besides Tobias Harris, because I mean, I still think Tobias would work, but the number and the years is very important there, because I think that could become a huge mistake, where I think Obi Toppin would be, if it became a mistake, would be a much smaller mistake.
Yeah, and Obi and Tobias are like completely different. Tobias needs the ball. He needs to shoot. He's not really a catch-and-shoot guy. He is damn sure not a lob threat. All Obi is going to do is set screens, lob, pick and pop, sit in the corner, bust threes. I got a stat here from Professionally Loud. Professionally Loud is the number one guy for Dayton basketball. If you like Dayton basketball, if you want to know anything about Dayton basketball, go follow at ProLoud. That's at ProLowd on Twitter. He'll post out everything about all the Dayton guys in the NBA. He posted out a screen cap from the game the other night where the Pacers played the Thunder. And it is, in the NBA, there are only three players this season who have 75 or more dunks and 75 or more three-point field goals made. So those three guys are Victor Wembanyama, Chet Holmgren, and Obi Toppin. Like, if you're not sold on Obi Toppin, that's a good stat to sell him on. Because, again, all you want Obi to do is those things, dunk and shoot threes. And you said, oh, it helps to have a Tyrese Halliburton. Well, guess what? It helps to have a Cade Cunningham. Well, I think it's better.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen how Cade can throw lobs to Durant and how Cade can create for others. So I think it would be a great fit. Now, who is your other player?
Yeah, the other player Andy has no idea about. This is another guy that can play the wing position. And this season, this guy has just been scorching the nets from three. Currently, he's shooting 42.2% from three on 5 attempts per game. His three-point attempt rate, I can give you here real quick, is 55.2%. So it's over half of his attempts have come from three. And this guy's true shooting percentage is 57.9%. So it's not like he's wasting many shots. That line for our guy in question here is 11 points per game, 2.1 rebounds, 1.4 assists, 0.6 steals, 0.3 blocks. 47.5% from three, again, 42.2% from three, and then 77.4% from the free throw line. He can play the shooting guard position, which is his main thing. He also has played the small forward position. 6'4", 204 pounds. You have any idea who I'm talking about, Andy?
Is it former Laker, current Nets? Is it Walker?
You got it. It's Lonnie Walker. And Lonnie Walker is only 25 years old. So another guy that fits right in with the guys, the young guy. I don't want to call them the core because I hate that, the core four. I feel like that phrase has just made me get a migraine every time I hear it now. So Lonnie Walker fits in with the young guys on this. Only 25 years old, is just getting better and better as a three-point shooter. I have a shot chart here in front of me again. Do you have any idea where he's shooting bad from three right now? Like, if you look at a shot chart, where's the area that's in red from three?
I do not.
Nowhere. There's nowhere on his shot chart where he's red. He's 16 of 32 from the left quarter. That's 50%. He's 21 of 55 from the left wing. That's 38.2%. 15 of 42 from top of the key. That's 35.7%. He's 30 of 70 from the right wing. That's 42.9%. And then Lonnie Walker's 12 of 23 from the right corner. That's 52.2%. I would like Lonnie Walker to finish better because he's also a very good athlete. And honestly, you can run lob plays for him because he is a leaper man. He can get up there. 62 of 117 for 53%. Lonnie Walker's not finishing great there. That's the one improvement. But again, it's another guy you can just throw there on the wing position. I would like him to be better, 6'4", 202. But he's shown he can hold up at both of those positions when he's played for the Lakers. Now, when he's played for the Nets, I do not know why more teams did not sign him, because is another guy that, like, clearly was getting better. You don't have to mess around in restricted free agency with him too as well, because I believe he only signed like a 1-year deal and is an unrestricted free agent. So I also would honestly offer him like $15 million per season. Obi's probably going to cost a lot more, like 20. I would just throw like 20 out there or something like that to begin with, because the Pacers don't want to match that since they have to pay Siakam. Whereas Lonnie Walker, like, and even if it took $20 million, like honestly, your cap space is so big. Who else are you going to spend that money on for the Pistons? You want to bring functional guys like this that are still young that fill in that role to where you have Cade, Ivy, Nassar, Stu, Duren, Sasser, that's your main six, Fontecchio, you resign, then you bring in the Obi Toppin, then you bring in the Lonnie Walker. There's your nine. Like, that sounds like a functional nine-man rotation that has a lot of shooting, that supplements everywhere, that still has young guys that you can believe in and that you can play around. And especially when you pull Cade and Ivy, please, please, dear Lord, let somebody, if it is Monty or whoever coaches the Pistons next, stagger Cade and Ivy. When one of them come out, then you can put a Lonnie Walker next to them, or you can put a Marcus Sasser next into them. And then with the forwards too, you can play around with who starts. Some nights you might want to start Stu and Durant. Some nights you want to start Fontecchio in there. Some nights you want to start Obi Toppin in there. Keeping it real, Obi's probably going to be the one that like gets played the most if you're going to pay him that much. Like, this is just how it's going to go. And Sasser, I feel like, might get pushed down a little bit more because everybody I'm bringing in here like has size over Sasser. Sasser's just going to have to step up his defensive game a lot more. But I mean, 42.2% for Lonnie Walker here. And again, it is another lob threat. You can run those plays for him because he's a great athlete and he's just gotten better. Last four seasons from San Antonio to San Antonio, last season with the Lakers, this season with the Nets, he's averaged over 11 points per game in those seasons. And then the last two seasons with the Lakers last season and then this season with the Nets has shot over 36% from three. And this year, for real, like if you watched even just the Nets game where the Pistons have played the Nets, like he's just scorched them from three. It seems like he can't miss. I really was thinking like Buddy Hield is somebody they should go after. But now I look at him like, nah, Lonnie Walker's the guy, because not only is he younger, Buddy Hield, you pretty much have to throw like a max offer at, because he's going to get paid. Somebody's going to want him there. And the only reason he would come to Detroit is to get a max offer. And then that's where it gets difficult, because somebody like that, like, you can't play him as small forward. He's already just kind of on defense. He could work like functionally on offense. That'd be fine. But defensively, I just don't think it's going to be that good. And also it's going to mess with the Asar and Fontecchio thing. Whereas somebody like Lonnie Walker and Obi Toppin, again, you can play around with those lineups. Those guys already know their role players in there. I don't believe it's going to be like the Jeremy Grant situation either, where he's like, I'm only signing here because I want to be the man and get the ball in my hands more. So those are the two that I want people to really focus on, who I think are the ideal targets, because they are super athletes. They both shoot threes. They're both lob threats. And they both fit in 25, 26 years old. Where you're like, yeah, you can keep these guys around for a while and they're going to do their job and help develop the core and make this a respectable unit. Do I think this team that I just laid out, that nine wins, makes the jump from like 15 wins to 41? I do not, but I think they're like a 35 win team.
So you may have met, you probably mentioned Lonnie Walker, if not the last pod, maybe two or three pods ago. You've mentioned him for a little while. And after you mentioned him, I started looking into him more too. And that's why when you started reading off the stats, I was like, oh, I think he's talking about him. So I guessed him because you brought him up before. But I think you have the right idea in terms of free agents. Now, I think before we started recording, we had a little disagreement in terms of the point guard position. Like, I think this team, well, the way Monty runs the team, this team needs a backup point guard. But I also believe this team needs a veteran center, unless they're going with this Wiseman is the backup center next season. And they're which we've talked about when they made the trade. I said they're not trying to win next season, because it makes no sense to trade for Wiseman and not play him because you're trying to win, because he needs court time to develop. And it made no sense for them to basically get rid of all the other centers they had to keep Wiseman, unless they're planning on keeping him next year. And I don't see them keeping him in some sort of minimal role, which this isn't a knock against Wiseman. It's just a knock for me against the timing of a team trying to win. That's not the player you have if your team is trying to turn the corner to get more wins. So I do think the team needs a backup center, regardless of how much everyone thinks Taj Gibson has changed our center position with his recent inspiration. But I think you're on track with no major free agency moves. Rely on the young guys, but give them guys with NBA experience who can still play, but they don't require any specific role or usage. They'll fit in wherever they fit in. And if they end up playing so good that it takes away minutes from the young guys, the young guys got to step up, because it's not year one or two for them. This is like their third season. Like, I'm sorry, you have to earn your minutes. You have to earn your role. And that helps the team decide, you know what, we need to move on from possibly this guy or that guy, because they're not who we need for Cade to be the team that we want to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Next episode, then I guess we'll look at the center position and like the veteran centers, because if free agency, unless you think somebody like Bismack Biyombo can come in and like give you real minutes at like age 32 or whatever he is there, it's tough. There might be one guy in particular in like Isaiah Hartenstein, but we'll kind of debate back and forth on that one, where that stands. And I don't know why New York would let him go. And we'll think about trades too, because I agree with you. The backup center is probably like the second most important position, in my opinion, of what they need to get in the offseason. But it's really hard to find like the guy that is in the same window that I just laid out, like 25, 26. Like, you can find the right number for them. They're really going to fit in what the team needs, role. It's like 25, 26. And there are a few guys that like figure it out by that point. And if they do figure it out by that point, they're probably getting paid a lot of money. Like Nick Claxton is the good example here. Like, again, he would work here, but he's so good that he's a starter for sure. And you got to pay him starter money. Like Jared Allen is probably like the floor of this kind of like guy where like, oh yeah, he's really good. He's around that age, but he's a starter. Like you got to pay him starter money no matter what. So we'll return to the backup center one, because that is another really important position that this Piston team needs to lay out. What do you think of Wiseman's recent play, though? Because I really think that it has improved. And I tweeted this back to our guy, Trademark Taz, where he's like something like, oh, people are hating on it. And I said, to me, I'm like, I respect the young man, and I like that he has turned it around this year. It's more that I think seeing this, I'm like, Troy Weaver is going to give him like 15 or 18 million per season. And that's the thing behind it to me, is like, we already know how much Troy loves him and wants him to succeed. And we've seen also that he'll overpay guys that he likes. So it sucks to me, because I'm like, I want to root for him and say like, you know, good job. Maybe you can come back next year on a small deal, but I don't think that's going to happen.
So, and this isn't meant to be like disrespectful, but his recent good play means nothing to me. And what I mean by that is, when you start looking at stats from the last 20 games of the season, like after the trade deadline, there's some weird games that happen in terms of some teams start shutting down players, start calling up G League guys. Like, some teams decide they no longer want to win any more games this NBA season. And so you just get some weird games and weird numbers. And I can think of a former player who put up great numbers after the trade deadline, who then got a contract for three seasons with the Detroit Pistons, who then they had to add assets to trade this season, Marvin Bagley. Like, how would this not be a similar Marvin Bagley situation, to have Wiseman play improved basketball, to finish the year and be like, this is our guy. This is who we need to be our backup center. We're going to give him a contract. And because we think so highly of his future, we're going to make sure it's a longer contract, because this is where we're going to like actually take advantage of, you know, asset management, where he's going to be like, we're going to have like 48 minutes of dominating center play with him and Durant and this and that. And it's just like, no, like I just don't see it. And I don't see the model of any other team that had basically two centers with two seasons of experience making a big win increase because they're just too young. The center position is a difficult position to be good at defensively. It takes time. That's why having two young centers to fill out your center rotation, it doesn't make sense to me. And I'm happy he's playing better, but it for me, it's too little too late. And even last season with Golden State, I think he put up a game where he put up monster numbers during the season. Almost every NBA player has the ability when they are cooking to put up some good numbers. They can do it. They're talented guys. But can you do it consistently to justify the contract, to get that job? I'm not a believer.
Yeah, and we begin most of these Pistons pod with the fan barometer. But I wanted to bring in a tweet that you brought up about our guy Taj Gibson here now saying like, oh, we've just seen so many people, and it's with the James Wiseman. Like, James Wiseman played so good because look at how much Taj Gibson has made a difference. Take the floor on what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I mean, I think it's complete nonsense, of course, because it's like, okay, you're telling me that Golden State didn't have any vets that could speak and like help unlock this kid, and like Taj Gibson's influence in the last 2 weeks is like something that's made a huge difference. And if it has, then I'm sorry. The coaching staff is a complete failure if Taj Gibson is going to come in and make this huge difference. And it's not to say that players can't connect with other players and have mentors and make a difference. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is this short amount of time to think that he's going to make this type of impact, I don't believe it. But it also points out where Weaver messed up again, because everybody was asking for a veteran backup center or Durin for this exact reason. And if you did trade for Wiseman, it's even more important to get him for both of those guys. And we're going to do it on a guy we pick up from the waivers, like with 20 games left in the season. Like, what a complete waste of time and poor roster construction.
Yeah, and I implore anybody, if you haven't listened to the recent Pistons Pulse with Laz Jackson, he had a great thought of Troy Weaver being a reaction GM, like he needs to see things and then react to what he sees rather than being a forward thinking GM. He's a backward thinking GM. Like, he just is slow to adjust, which I joke with Andy beforehand. Hey, at least Monty and Troy are on the same page there. They don't make adjustments. Fantastic. All right. They finally got on the same page. Ay. Andy, do you have any final thoughts on this Pistons squad as it limps to the finish line and perhaps becomes the worst team in franchise history and gives poor Special K another terrible Piston season?
I mean, I don't want it for the players because I really like the players. I do. Even James Wiseman, I wish him success. I want him to do well. I have nothing against the players. But I honestly would not be happy. I would honestly be happy if they broke the record and had the worst season of all time, just because I believe that Weaver and Monty deserve that on their resume. And hopefully it leads to change, because you can't tell me the adjustments that they've made and the choices that they've made, they don't deserve to be fired. They deserve it. They've earned it. So nothing else to add.
Yeah, I agree. They deserve it. We've read off tweets from NBA analysts, not fans, not people connected with like beat writing or whatever, people whose job it is to go and analyze the NBA at large, like Sam Bassini and then Keith Smith and these people saying like, this is a terrible team. Like, this is one of the worst coaching jobs. This is one of the worst GM jobs. You're right. They deserve it. And we keep saying things like this because we want ownership to wake up. I don't know if that's going to be what it is, but we want somebody in charge to wake up and be like, no, this isn't cutting it. We need to go in a different direction. We want the Pistons to be good. We want everybody from the star player to the 15th guy to the dudes in the G League. We want them all to be good. And everybody that's supposed to support and coach and direct these players has put them in terrible positions, has not played them certain cases. Like, they've just done them the worst service. They've done them the most disservice, however you want to put it, that you could do in a single season. So yeah, if they get there, they definitely deserve the title of the worst team in franchise history, because the captain of the ship led them right into the rocks, man.
Yeah, and just getting Cade back for the entire season, basically, you can't be worse than last season. There's just no way you can't be worse than last season, unless you say, you know what, the coaching was worse than last season. And it's like, if the coaching is worse than last season, You made the wrong choice. So let's make the correction fast, cut ties, move forward, move in a new direction. So,
yeah, that just makes me think of the Bill Simmons tweet we read when Cade was like going nuclear. I think it was against Boston, or I forget who it was. But then they're like, no, let's let Burke shoot it at the end of the game. And they lost it. And then the other night when Ivy was going nuclear, and then they're like, all right, let's run some post-ups for Duren. It's like, this is what we're talking about. Like, you can't let these people run this team anymore, man. So Andy, let everybody know where they can find you one last time.
You can find me on Twitter at @D_D_Pistons_fan. Yeah, we're almost there. We've almost made it to the finish line of this season.
Yeah, mercifully, it will end soon. So yeah, thank you everybody listening, and we will catch you next time. Go on in.